Welcome home. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. We are Baltimore positive. This is baseball season and an NFL draft weekend, but it's crab cake week. On Wednesday, we will be at Cooper's North. I'll have the Back to the Future Maryland Lottery scratch-offs to give away. We'll also be at Coco's on the 30th and then off to Red Brick Station in White Marsh on the 7th of May. Really looking forward to that one. It is a big month. We thought we'd have more quality baseball around here than maybe we've had. We're going to see the Detroit Tigers this weekend after a couple games with the Washington Nationals. I thought it'd be a good opportunity. You know, back in my day, in the sports day, I would line up every Detroit sports writer I could find, anyone with any connection to the Tigers. I try to find Al Kaline. I try to find everybody. But now I just try to just dabble in and maybe do one piece on Tigers Orioles this weekend. This guy has been covering baseball and sports in the Detroit area since right before the Doug DeCinces home run against the Tigers at Memorial Stadium that launched Oriole magic in the summer of 1979. He is now in semi-retirement. I hope he's hitting a golf ball. I think everybody does in St. Simons Island, Georgia. But I don't think there's anybody that could write the walls in the history of the Lindell AC quite the way Lynn Henning could from the Detroit News. Lynn, how are you? And much like all of my former, friends and young old timers, as Stedman would say, how's that retirement going for you, man?
Yeah, I mean it's an alleged retirement, Nestor. I went down and had two stints in Lakeland, covering spring training. Got down your way once, and everything is really almost routine in terms of the way it was for a lot of years. And then I cover the Tigers minor leagues for them throughout the year, and I still dabble a little bit in on the help side as the minor league system, of course, interweaves with the big league club. So in that respect, it feels like there's not been a lot of detachment here in this alleged retirement, but it works out just nicely because I get to do it kind of on my terms, and it's been extremely comfortable to stay attached to baseball and a chance to talk with my old friends in Baltimore, one of my favorite stops at my favorite ballpark.
Well, you went to 33rd Street back in the day. I don't know if you were at the DeCinces home run game, but when I bring on sage people like you, and when we talk about eras of ownership, and every time I think of Lakeland, Florida, I think of seeing Sparky Anderson sitting there eating off a paper plate after a game and giving me spitting all sorts of things, including wisdom at me, through all of it. What do you make of the Baltimore baseball circumstance and situation in regard to all the rest of it? And really being an expatriated guy now, living down in Georgia, following your team from afar. But we have a new owner here. I don't need to tell you what a dumpster fire it's been here for 3 decades, and what the new owner here finds, because I always think of the Detroit situation for baseball as having had a sugar daddy there, that the Tigers fans probably had it a little better than they might have if somebody was managing beans around there for their baseball program over the last 25 or 30 years.
Yeah, my view on that is that it's usually the general manager that makes the difference as opposed to the owner. And I think, Nestor, that's obvious in the case of the Orioles. Not that Peter Angelos hasn't given way here in that particular era of skinflint ownership was well known throughout baseball that Peter was meddling where he probably shouldn't have meddled and not helping where he could have helped. And I always sympathized with the Orioles fans in that regard. But really, when things began to turn around, and we all know Mike Elias's captaincy of that front office is why the Orioles are good and why they're going to remain good. Now, I know there are issues right now, and those issues are probably somewhat predictable, particularly on the starting pitching side. And that's why I thought last July there was every chance the Orioles were going to steal Tarik Skubal from the Tigers. And probably for Jackson. I just believed that was going to be the trade. And I thought it would have worked for both teams. And I think they had to have been talking seriously right up until the trade deadline about that potential deal. It would have given Skubal 3 playoff seasons with the Orioles, and the Tigers would have gotten Holiday for a shortstop need that is eternally existent here. I thought it was going to work, but it didn't. And here's where we're at, and the Orioles are a little light on starting pitching, to say the least. Tigers are flush with it.
Well, when you start talking about Jackson Holliday here, or Kowser, or Westberg, or Rutschman, or Henderson, you start to talk about, it's like that scene in Pulp Fiction where they open the briefcase and you don't know what's in there, but you know it's gold. You know it's going to shine. And making those kinds of ballsy deals through the history of baseball, really difficult thing to do, to deal off a guy that you gave a whole season away to be so bad that you can have a player of that caliber in a 20, 21st age year, and to think that you're going to have that player. I think there would have been outrage here had they done that. And had they done that, the Orioles would have had a number one pitcher unless his arm falls off. And there's been a lot of that around here. I mean, Elias is getting destroyed right now, Lynn, and so's Brandon Hyde because of the lack of patience here since 1983, when we last time he won. But more than that, all of the pitchers whose arms have fallen off, I mean, I look at the injuries and say, well, they're probably not going to be as good as you wanted them to be. And then there's the cry to the owner of let's spend some more money and buy some more pitching.
It's a case often, as we know, Nestor, where it's just not a matter, though, that free agent market being like a trip to Walmart, where you just take your shopping list and load up the cart and check out, because those players are in short supply. They're not always practical ads, and they simply are not always going to be achievable for the areas of need. That's why I think trading is a far more efficient way to get it done, a more direct way to get it done. If I had to criticize Mike for anything, I think it's because he's hoarding so many trade chips. And you find yourself in this situation with an abundance of talent, not knowing where everybody's really going to slot for a while. I think I would have gotten very aggressive last summer if I were Mike Elias and the Orioles and made that Skubal deal, because that would have given you what you now lack, that foundational rotation piece that carries you not only through the season, but gives you a one up on everybody in the playoff time. Now, that is easier said than done. And as you said too, there's always the physical issue. And if a guy does go down next week and you've given away a franchise shortstop like Jackson Holliday, I understand that calculation. But I think you have to be aggressive. I think you have to trust help sometimes. I think you have to trust franchise talent, in the case of Skubal or Holiday, for being what it is, and swap it if that's what's really going to improve your team. And in that instance, I could see that deal last summer working, and I was a little surprised, frankly, that it didn't.
Well, I'm not going to criticize Elias on that front because he dealt for Corbin Burns in the middle of the fire last summer when things were breaking the wrong way. He dealt for Eflin, right? But no Rodriguez, no Eflin right now. Clearly, Burns didn't want to come back at any price. They didn't get aggressive financially in the free agent market, and now they're paying the price. Had I talked to you 8 weeks ago and said Charlie Morton's 41, Shigano hadn't thrown a pitch, and he's turned out to be serviceable. And the notion that Cade Povich, these young guys they brought up, the young kid the other day, that they're going to have to go with this right now. And the bats haven't been really right. This whole thing hasn't been right so far in a lot of ways. Henderson didn't start the season. Kowser got hurt. Kerstad took one off the hand the other day again. I mean, this has been a spate of bad luck for an organization with really high hopes, new ownership. They've almost doubled their payroll in the first year, and it's just not going to be going well by the time they get to Detroit this week.
I understand that too, Nestor, completely. And what I would say is, based on the Tigers' experience last year, give this thing a chance to straighten out. The Orioles have too much talent. Now, they're in a division that is unforgiving. We all know that. And that is the difficulty for an Orioles fan right now, compared with, let's say, the American League Central, where you have definitely an opportunity by being a few games over 500 to win that thing. It's not going to be as receptive a case for anybody in the American League East, including the Orioles, but your talent, Nestor, is still so utterly deep on that team, and the bats will come around. the pitching is going to be an issue. There's no question about it. And how do you get past that issue? You're going to need some luck there. You're going to need some development. You're going to need some, probably a major deal in July. We all know the realities there. You can't overcome bad pitching, but you do have to count on it straightening out, getting healthier, and perhaps adding a piece or two that's going to make a difference. In that case, I can see the Orioles getting back into this thing. Otherwise, without the pitching, no, it's going to be a long season. It's clear as a bell, even in April. You're going to have those arms at some point.
That's why I bring you sage guys like you on to just reconfirm that bad pitching's bad pitching. You can't win with bad pitching, right? And Sparky told you that, Earl told you that, everybody told you that.
Baseball's told us that for 100 years, and we're seeing that right now again with the Orioles, a prime exhibit of that. But I keep saying, Nestor, this is baseball, and what looks bad in April can look pretty good in May, and arms can find grooves. Without Eflin and without Rodriguez, it is a tough road to hoe for them, no doubt about it. But I would say give this thing a chance. There's still so much skill on this Orioles roster. I mean, what Mike has done here with this 40 man and in the minor leagues, your drafting has been consistently excellent with him. And this is a good GM. But I honestly, I go back to that deal last July, and I think that's right now an example of what the Orioles could have done that would have probably given you a much more greater sense of security and peace this April if you had Tarek Skubal out there every 5 days.
Well, I love Skubal. I mean, obviously we saw him, and everything that the Tigers went through to get to where they were last October. What made him so expendable for that organization? And also to say, why would you give him up? Well, you give him up to get a franchise shortstop, but nothing less. There wasn't going to be any Connor Norby, Stowers kind of deal, right? I mean, and probably not even Couser or Westberg, right? That probably would not have whet the appetite, would it have?
Well, and this gets back to GMs, Nestor, and Scott Harris has done a terrific job with the Tigers since he came in 2.5 years ago. And he understands pitching and throwing strikes is how you get it done primarily. They have built a very good staff here with excess pieces. They have some folks at AAA that could easily be starting in the big leagues. And they're now using a six-man rotation. You're going to see Skubal this weekend and understand why they're giving him ample rest because he's about as good as anybody has been since on the left-handed side I've seen since Carlton and Koufax and those guys. I mean, that's how good of a lefty this guy is. But they have great depth. Jack Flaherty came back after they got a super trade made for him with the Dodgers last deadline. He's back and throwing well. They add very good pitching parts. And to give you an example there, Nestor, they went out and signed Alex Cobb from the Indians during the offseason as a free agent addition. He hasn't even pitched yet. He had a hip issue. Now he'll be back before long,
You
but they're
keep naming
already.
all these old Orioles.
Yeah, I know. And Alex Cobb is an example though of the kind of guy they add here. And always seem to benefit from. They are extremely good at identifying arms in this
Well,
organization.
we've added Kyle Gibson and we're waiting on him. And I
Yeah.
don't even know what we're waiting on, Lynn.
Well, and I'll say again, it's always the GM to me, Nestor, not ownership. It's who is doing what with the pieces that you can realistically and pragmatically add. Separate from dollar signs, I don't think free agency is the way that you really build a championship team. It can help in a complementary fashion, but it's not the undergirding for a playoff or championship roster. And that's why I think Mike Elias has done so wonderfully with the Orioles, and why Scott Harris is off and running with the Tigers here, because this kid is really good as a GM. He knows exactly what they need. He's good also, Nestor, and this is key, making these 1-year signings and oftentimes then flipping them at the deadline and getting more pieces for his farm and ultimately for his big league roster. He's done a magnificent job. It's not a case where Mike Ilitch was, let's say, unchecked with his payroll. They had to observe some things, not many, but it's not
Well, they did
also.
fly outside the realm of what other teams, certainly what was going on here from a
Oh yeah.
financial standpoint.
Yeah, they did. I mean, their biggest thing, Nestor, was they took a gamble on Pudge Rodriguez when everybody was sidestepping him because of the back issue back in 04. That's how they got Pudge and how this thing started. They took a flyer on Magley Ordóñez, who had a bad knee and who had had a process in Vienna, Austria, to try to rehabilitate that knee. They took a chance on that. No one else was ready to sign those guys, and Mike Ilitch gambled on them, and it got an enormous payoff. And then, really, that's about the extent to which he went and added what you might call Brinks trucks additions and on the free agent market. Otherwise, he was trading for Miguel Cabrera. This was not a team built necessarily on largesse, but
It
what it's
doesn't need to be in your division or hasn't needed to be historically, right?
No, I'm one of those people, Nestor, that believes you don't buy your way into the playoffs or into a world championship. You complement it. And really, the last time the Tigers won, we're getting back here into the Doug DeSensei day, the Earl Weaver day, 84. They did it with using free agency as an adjunct. They went out and got a Darrell Evans. They traded for Willie Hernandez. They added a Dave Bergman. But they did it primarily with homegrown talent, the same way the 68 Tigers, the other world championship team of my life, did it with homegrown talent. And the Orioles are proving, in my estimation, that that's the way that they return and have returned back to the upper echelon, is by way of homegrown talent and drafting and signing. And so that's where I view the framework for a real contender and how it's constructed. And how you do it is in the examples of Mike Elias and Scott Harris now that he's working here in Detroit.
Tigers stole Al Kaline from Southern High School 50
Sure
years
did.
ago, and then they started 35-5 in 84,
Yeah.
and we haven't been the same since 83 around here. Lynn Henning is here. He has been a longtime writer at the Detroit News. He is in somewhat of semi-retirement. I don't even understand it. He's hitting the golf ball. He's down in Georgia, but still covering the Tigers. What a start they got off to. I mean, it's been the opposite here. We have an owner who had his own bobblehead last week. He's had the team a year, and he already has his own bobblehead. They just got streaming this week for the first time, Lynn. Out of market streaming. Had you been in Georgia and an Oriole fan? Nah, no, no, thank you. You have to buy the whole MLB package, the whole deal. But they're trying, but they just figured Masson out here for money and all of that. Give me some good news about your franchise because it was sort of given up for dead this time last year. All of a sudden, some things came together maybe more quickly than even an old sage like you thought they could for the Tigers.
Well, in some respects, yeah. I picked them last year to win 85 games. They ended up winning 86. What I didn't see happening, though, Nestor, was them starting off so poorly. They just had no hitting to really support that great pitching. So guess what? It comes to be July, and they're sellers. And they sell off Flaherty, and they sell off Andrew Chafin, and they sold here, and they sold there. Carson Kelly and everybody else they got rid of. And lo and behold, they go on a what 36-11 run or something like that to close things out because that young talent gestated. And to give you an example of how they have done it, Parker Meadows, really at Sin Center Field, who covers the equivalent of two outfield positions and who has a big left-handed bat, really, hasn't played a game for them yet and won't play for them for at least another 5 or 6 weeks. And that's because of a nerve issue. Well, they've overcome that. They've been without a lot of people. Matt Vierling, who played third base and right field alternatingly for them, hasn't played a game for them yet. This is an example of how Harris has patched up. They've lost a little pitching from the bullpen of late with some injuries, and that has been something now that's been more of a threat than it's really cost them games. But that's about the only weakness on this team. And getting back to last year, though, it was simply a case where the youth grew up and gestated. And in that second half, they played at a torrid pace and ended up winning one more game than I thought they were capable of winning. It was a very unique timing fashion in which they did that last year, starting cold and finishing so red hot. But ultimately, talent was what got them into the playoffs and got them nearly into the ALCS.
Lynn Ehnke, the sage writer from the Detroit News, joining us here on the eve of the Orioles getting together with the Tigers in Detroit. Scooble gonna stick around now, right? I mean, as much as there was a little bit of a fire sale feeling for a couple of months last year when things weren't going well in May and June, you know, he might be there for another dozen years, huh?
Well, here's the thing, and when we all know this, it takes two to tango on a contract extension. And if you're Tarek Skubal and your agent is Scott Boras, are you signing extensions? No, you're going to go to free agency and probably come close to being the first billion-dollar player the way this market is going. I mean, he's going to make, I don't know, 400 million, 500 million in free agency, which will come at the end of next season, end of the 26th season. And there's really no way, Nestor, that with Scott Boras as your agent, you're going to sign an extension unless it's for $500 million. The Tigers aren't going to invest that in a pitcher when we all know the frailty of pitching, to get back to your early point. And so he's going to hit free agency. The Tigers will hang on to him unless they would happen to fall out of it the next 2 years. And then they could probably spin him at one of the two deadlines, but that's not likely to happen. They have a good team here, and it's going to remain good for the foreseeable future. This is not a team built for cycles. So even if they lose Skubal, you get the draft pick, and I think you have to move on. You have to prepare yourself for losing good talent, because you also need to trust in your power to regenerate that talent, to draft well. That's what Mike Elias is doing. That's what Scott Harris is doing. The first thing Scott Harris did here, Nestor, was he changed his scouting apparatus at the top completely. The Tigers' inability to develop the farm are why they haven't won in 41 years. Well, that's changing. Their farm is very rich, very robust now. They're doing better in Latin America. All along, I knew that was the answer. It wasn't free agent dollars, it was what you were drafting and bringing up from the farm roots. And that's what's changed here in Detroit.
You feel bad about 41 years? It's been 42 years. You found somebody that you
How
could
about it?
commiserate with where it's been worse, Lynn.
Well, why do you think I always resonate so well with my buddies in Baltimore? Because I feel like there's common blood there, on top of the fact that, of course, my favorite ballpark has always been Camden. It always will be. I'm so glad they brought the fences back, because I hated to see them lose the intimacy of that ball, wondrous ball field when they changed those fences. Now they've got them back to where they should be, and it's got the intimacy that I always loved about Camden. It's by far my favorite ballpark.
And by far, my favorite ballpark was Tiger Stadium because of the
Yep.
word you used, intimacy, right?
Intimacy. And they went and crazily, they built the exact opposite of Tiger Stadium when they built Comerica Park, for which I've never forgiven them, because they went to this monstrous, expansive, outlandish place. And everything that was good about Tiger Stadium, they decided to do this in the opposite polar end. And I just don't understand it yet, but I've been on that horse for a long time.
Well, I would just say for you guys to be involved in all of this, the hardest part for me and being an older guy, and you've talked about this your whole life, you don't talk about the Red Wings or the Pistons or the Lions in respect of, well, if the player gets too good, they're going to go somewhere else because we don't have enough money and we don't buy top shelf. We only buy this kind of player or whatever. Baseball's still like it's a dinosaur in that way that we discuss it in that way.
It is. It is. And of course, that gets back to another question. That's what's hottest in Baltimore, the Ravens or the Orioles when they're good? The Tigers were always the straw that stirred the drink here. But I knew when the Lions got good, and they were ultimately going to get. And guess why, by the way? A GM who knew what he was doing got in here, and Brad Holmes. And now the Lions are an elite team. But that's where all of this boils down to. It's why Baltimore has such rich sports fabric, primarily because, of course, the Orioles have been the Orioles here for 70 some years. but also because the Ravens offset that and give you two spheres throughout your year that you can really, really concentrate on, fixate on, and live and die with. And the Detroit scene is more four sport, no question about it. You got the Pistons in the playoffs now for the first time in 17 years, and the city is wedded to them right now. And the Lions draft this week is going to be, again, the point of focus in an entire sports region. But the Tigers are eternal in Detroit. They are eternal. And right now, everybody is as involved with them as they always are. And it's a good story. It's a good sports story throughout Detroit. But the Tigers right now still have never really lost their position as patriarch of Detroit's pro sport teams.
Well, I appreciate you taking up and you give me all of this four sports, and I see the Michigan State thing behind you. They got the Michigan Wolverines. There's a whole college thing going on up there as well.
Oh,
hockey as well. College hockey's a thing. Like,
huge.
on and on, right?
It's a pretty rich tapestry of sports up this way, Nestor. But again, understand that my favorite road trip is always Baltimore and always will be. I love that town. I love the Orioles in their wonderful lineage. Earl Weaver was my favorite guy to ever deal with in baseball, and I just feel this brotherhood with Baltimore that will never go away.
Have you read the new book, the Earl Weaver book by John Miller?
I was going to get it, and I will be getting it because unquestionably that is going to be a cover-to-cover read for me.
Oh, there's no question about that. I've had him on through all the eras. I did the last ever interview with Earl Weaver, and
Oh.
John found me right before Earl died. And John was enamored because I didn't talk to him anything about the Orioles. I talked to him about how he became a manager, and apparently no one ever asked him those questions, about why he wanted to be a manager and all that. It wasn't quoted anywhere. So kind of interesting stuff. Lynn Enig, if John Steadman were alive, and he is through my spirit, we would call you a young old timer. So I appreciate it, and I
Take care.
appreciate your time as always. And hey, next time you come to your favorite ballpark, I'm going to take you and get you some crab cakes here. I'll run you up the street to Fadley's. We'll do it upright. All right.
Got a deal on that, Nestor, always.
All right. Take care of yourself. Enjoy vacation land. Lynn Enig, longtime Detroit scribe, covering all things for the Detroit News, and joining us here from retirement. I want the kind of retirement he has, where I sit around and watch baseball all day and talk about it. I am Nestor. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, and we never stop talking Baltimore positive.